Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. It's been an almost 17-month slog of an election season, and Americans are apparently worse for wear. The electorate is feeling anxiety over the presidency and jobs. Jobs, after all, is what keeps this $20 trillion economy on the move every year. Two-thirds of the economy is consumer-driven, and without jobs and paychecks, there are no consumers, hence the economy falters. I'm getting anxious just scripting this introduction. So what role does Silicon Valley play in this economy? Here in the Bay Area, we see it as an innovation engine, generating new jobs and even sub-industries like 3D printing and new apps. But Silicon Valley's tech advancements have taken away things, too, like manufacturing jobs. And that's where Steve Jobs told him, look, I'm not bringing those jobs back.
He's not. They aren't going to come. They don't exist.
That's thought leader and Silicon Valley veteran Kara Swisher. We asked Kara to join us for a discussion around politics in and around Silicon Valley, as well as the entire election season, for that matter. And here we go.
My name is Kara Swisher. I'm executive editor of Recode.
I want to start with politics, though,
right. Okay.
Because I've seen you almost everywhere. We follow you, obviously, very, very vehemently, if you will. This has been a hell of an election cycle.
Yeah, it certainly has.
And you've been throwing a little bit of relief our way here and there. But at the same time, I just like to get your whole zeitgeist feel about what's happening up until now.
Well, I think it's kind of sickening. I like wake up and check everything all the time. I feel like I want to go away for the next, whatever, 12 days and not pay any attention to it, because it really sucks you into your phone and you're checking all the, like you're a pollster or something like that. And, you know, the ups and downs are really disturbing. And I was riding an Uber here today. And the Uber driver was like, I don't believe this election's so close after all that he's done. He's obviously a Hillary supporter. And he's right. It's like crazy, crazy making.
Right.
So, you know, you have one candidate who literally does one offensive thing after the other. And I think that's probably why people are like, it's so offensive. You forget all the offenses. And the other one who has big issues around trust and trust, essentially.
Right.
With a lot of the populace reacting in an overly emotional way towards her.
Right. And I'm kind of a transplant to the Silicon Valley scene, if you will. I came from L.A. about 5.5 years ago. And politics in Silicon Valley has always been an interesting confluence to me.
Or
lack thereof.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of where I was leaning, because we have one lightning rod personality in Peter Thiel that stood out this year. And we can talk about Peter for a second and his contributions, both fiscal and otherwise, to the Republican cause. But at the same time, it seems like, where is everybody else?
Well, you know, Reid Hoffman has been very active. Meg Whitman, a Republican, has been very active against Trump. I think most people here tend towards Hillary, all of them, almost all of them, except for Peter Thiel and some other weird people with him. They tend to be Democratic. There were a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters among the lower echelons in tech, a lot of the tech bros liked Bernie Sanders.
Interesting.
And which is interesting, because he really has almost no tech profile whatsoever.
Right.
So it's interesting. They're very noncommittal, and they certainly haven't backed Hillary the way they backed Obama. I think it's by a factor of three in the fundraising. They don't like to get that involved or spend the money yet until it matters. And then eventually on certain issues like immigration and other places, they'll try to spend, I suppose.
Right. Let's stay with Silicon Valley. Like I said, I'd like to far-reaching discussion if we could. Let's talk about the landscape. Okay.
Right.
We looked a little bit at politics in Silicon Valley, Peter Thiel notwithstanding.
Yeah.
The factor, though, the three times factor, is something that we should take a look at.
Yeah, it's interesting, because, you know, what's fascinating is tech people try to pretend they have all the solutions to everything, and they sort of lecture the government on everything. It was interesting. Obama, who has been a very tech-friendly president, relatively, except for around the encryption stuff, you know, said, you know, everyone in Silicon Valley comes here and gives me advice, and really it is the lecture to him. And he's like, essentially, there's no app for Syria. We can't solve it in easy ways, and the government isn't here to be, you can't be totally efficient in a government situation, because the problems they have are really intractable.
Right.
And so I think it's an interesting mentality here that anything can be fixed if you just think about it, you know, or if you, there's a way to do it, there's a way to grok it or hack it. And when you actually pull it apart, and I've talked about this before, if they could grok things so well, why haven't they solved the diversity problem? Why haven't they solved all kinds of problems? If they're so smart, could they not fix a lot of things? And I think the issue is they're solving right now, Silicon Valley is solving easy problems, not the really hard ones.
Okay.
And those will be interesting to see. And I think a lot of the stuff that's being developed now in Silicon Valley, self-driving cars, a lot of healthcare stuff, things around income and jobs, the job sharing economy, the on-demand economy, these are big issues that are going to iterate throughout our society, that we'll see what happens. Like AI, the development of AI is going to eliminate jobs. Well, what does that mean?
Right. Well, we had Kevin Kelly on a couple weeks ago, and he has an idea that 150 years ago we were all farmers, and now we're not. So what is the next thing?
What is there a next thing? What is it? And especially when computers can replace almost every job. It's really kind of amazing how with advanced, you know, artificial intelligence. And I know people who are for this is like, oh, don't worry about it. We shifted from the farm economy to the manufacturing economy, and we'll shift to the next one. But I think that our politicians and most citizens really are not very creative in where it's going, or they don't know. And I think a lot of the Trump phenomena is a reflection of an echo of the last one, where manufacturing ended and we moved to technology, but technology didn't have the answer for many, many, many people. And it lifted lots of people, but not these people who are backing Trump. And what I think he's trying to give them fear and, oh, I'll fix it. But there is no fixing what has happened to these jobs. They're not going, they're not coming back.
Right.
And these people aren't educated in the way that's necessary for the new economy. So the real challenge for whoever the next president is not to play to their fears, but like, what are we going to do with this vast amount of people who just simply don't have the skills necessary for the next economy?
Right.
And it's already here, and it's, you can already feel bits and pieces of it.
I keep seeing in my mind as you're speaking the picture of President Obama visiting Silicon Valley around the table, the dinner table with everybody. And that's where Steve Jobs told him, look, I'm not bringing those jobs back.
He's not. They're going to come. They don't exist. Like, you look at something years ago. I remember the reason I left The Washington Post was because, you know, they were classifieds and retail advertising. Just touch classifieds. I kept thinking, it's going to collapse industries. It's not going to return them. So a classified business went from a $70 million business at the Washington Post to a $7 million one at Craigslist in that particular city. It wasn't going to 70 anymore. Like, it's seven now. That's the amount, or it could be slightly bigger. And there's not as many jobs at all. And so the question is, what do we do in a jobless economy? Like, that it's really hard. And how do we retrain people? And what do we retrain them for? And how do we not create this sort of stew of rage? And look, a lot of these people, politicians aren't telling this, but they are going to be left behind. They are going to be left behind unless we retrain them. And even if we retrain them, it's really going to be hard for a lot of people.
It's going to look very Fifth Element, I think.
Yeah, I do too. I just like it's fascinating. And there is, you know, you have a lot of empathy for this, but there aren't a lot of solutions. Look in San Francisco. You've got such a haves and haves not situation.
Absolutely. And it just gets wider and wider.
And it will get wider and wider.
We're speaking with Kara Swisher, and I want to stay zeitgeist if we can, because you had a great, if you could solve it, why haven't you solved it, segue there. And an ongoing theme of this show and my prior show here in San Francisco has been lack of women in corner offices.
Yes. Yep.
Now, you've been here longer than me, so what are you seeing?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because they talk about diversity a lot. And, you know, we have this problem at our business, too, is we have to really spend a lot of time making certain that we have a diverse employment base. And you know, we have not, I don't think we have succeeded. We had for a while, we had 50-50 women and men. We had not nearly enough people of color working for us. And it changes, and you really have to spend a lot of time developing sources, developing people, bringing them in, and figuring out how to do it. And I think a lot of people sort of, they shrug their shoulders and they say, you know, a lot of tech people, when they have these 70 numbers for 70% white men or something like that, there's no pipeline. I can't find people. I think nobody's really thinking about how they find people and the kind of commitment it takes. And someone at like Stuart Butterfield at Slack has made a commitment to it. And it's still hard. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Or Mark Benioff is, you know, talking about it, certainly, after years of not focusing on it. And so I think I spent a lot of time thinking about it. But again, it's one of these intractable issues that you just have to do. Like, it's like, you know, shovelful by shovelful. You've got to really just dig until you can get to a place where you have a diverse workforce.
I feel like Benioff has been dog whistling this for a while and nobody's listening.
Well, no, they're listening. I think what they think it's not something they can do. It's sort of, you throw your hands up. Well, I'm trying. But I think you really have to have a commitment and say, this is how many we're going to hire. You know, at Vox Media, for example, we have very low numbers now. They've improved quite a bit, but they're still low. You know what I mean? But they're better. They're like quantumly better. And then the question is, how do you get to the right range? I mean, you'd like to have 50-50 men and women. You'd like to have a significant amount of people of color. And not just because it's the right thing to do, which you should do something always because it's the right thing to do. I don't know why people say, well, you know, we're a business. It's like, yeah, but it's the right thing to do.
Right.
I think what you have to do is say, this is good for my business if I do this. And a lot, there's study after study showing this. So,
absolutely.
So, right. And you know, you're a better person if you have more. And I'm not talking about just people of color. I'm not talking about just that. I'm talking about age differences, all kinds of differences, background differences, geographical differences. It really does foment a great culture if you have more people. I've always found that.
Absolutely. You get better ideas. You're right. It's data-driven, too. It's quantitative and qualitative.
And political conservative. You know, you just get, if we can have civil discussions, which we're not able to have at this point.
Right.
You certainly have a more open mind. And
well, Kara Swisher, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, anytime.
That was Kara Swisher. She was at the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal, and then she launched Recode along with Walt Mossberg, where she is the executive editor. She's covered Silicon Valley for decades and has the most reliable inside track for Yahoo News that remains the envy of the tech reporter universe, myself included. We have links to the Kara Swisher interview and all of our segments this week at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. We have an extended version of our chat with Kara Swisher, actually. We started with our YouTube sensation and role model, Simone Yetch, and her version of robot building. Then we had a double dip on the holidays. First, we got emotionally comfortable with consumerism with psychologist Kit Yarrow. Then we did a deep dive on big data with Adobe Analytics. Segment links are also at kgoradio.com/techonomics. And if you're missing something else, just tweet me after you follow me, of course, on Twitter, at KGOJason. I also tweet and post a list of the music we use on the show. So this soon-to-be historic and ultimately listenable and shareable list is called Techonomics Playlist. For all of our guests, for executive producer Mike Anthony, and for producer Liana Wilcox, happy Halloween. This has been Techonomics. I am Jason Middleton. Have great weeks, everybody.